This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome. If you're in the U.S. or around the world, thanks for joining us on Baseball Outside the Box. And we are thrilled to have another great show today. And don't forget, we are in over 100 countries, coaches, players, and parents listening to us. We really appreciate it. So I want to thank everybody for what you do. And special aloha to ESPN Honolulu and all our guests there. Thanks for ESPN Honolulu for hosting our baseball podcast on your site. We really appreciate it. And we've been getting some great responses. Keep up. Don't forget, keep up sharing the show. Go to baseballoutsidethebox.com for the audio. Peter Caliendo YouTube, and obviously ESPN Honolulu. All right, folks, today we're going to delve in. Great show. We're going to delve into the mind of a general manager. You know, how a general manager operates, how he deals with his staff, all kinds of great stuff behind the scenes. And we got a great one, 16-year major league general manager. But you know what? He didn't start as a general manager. He played high school baseball, football. You know, and that's an interesting thing. We're going to talk about that. He was a captain of both catcher and a linebacker in football. He was the captain of the team. He was a founder of Duquette Sports Academy. He was with the Expos, the Red Sox, the Orioles. Assistant scout with the Brewers, and we're going to talk about that because that's interesting. Expos director of player development, 9 years with the Orioles. He's well known in the industry, well respected, incredible. Let me welcome, let's get started with Dan Duquette. Dan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm great, Pete. How are you? Thanks for that generous introduction. I really appreciate it.
Well, let me tell you, somebody, you've come a long ways. It's amazing what you've done in the game of baseball, and you continue to do it. We're going to talk about that. I want to take us back to your childhood a little bit, you know, because I want to get inside your head and what you kind of were looking to do when you were a young kid. What was your dream? Was it baseball?
Well, I don't know if it was baseball, but my dad played ball with us. My brother Dennis is a couple years older than I, and I'm from six kids in our family. My dad was a school teacher and a executive. He was a school superintendent, and I grew up in a small town, Dalton, Massachusetts, which is famous for Crane and Company, which is the paper mill upon which U.S. greenbacks are printed. The paper is made at Crane's, and my grandfather worked at Crane's for 50 years. He was the last 50-year employee of Crane's, and the Crane's were a well-respected town in the community. Zenas Crane was, and one of the other Cranes was governor of Massachusetts. So it was a politically well-connected family, but we grew up in a mill town. My dad grew up in one of the Cranes houses across the street, and the Cranes were big on education in the community. And my dad ran the educational system for him because they knew him growing up, because that's where my grandpa worked. But we played a lot of ball. I was better in football than baseball, but I love baseball. And, you know, believe it or not, my brother and I, we used to have wiffle ball games out on the back lot right across the street. And we used to have the Red Sox versus the Orioles. So this was about 1967, right? So I was like 9 years old in 67. My brother was 11. And one team would have to be the Orioles and mimic all the great players on that Orioles team. And of course, the Orioles, you know, they won the World Series in 66. And Mark Belanger was from Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And I delivered the great Orioles shortstop, and I delivered Mark's newspaper because he lived in Dalton. But anyway, one team was the Orioles, the other team was the Red Sox, and so you had to mimic the batting styles of Brooks Robinson, Boot Ball, yeah. Frank Robinson, Mark Belanger. And then, you know, on the Red Sox teams, that would be George the Boomer Scott, who was in Pittsfield the year before to win the Triple Crown for the Pittsfield Red Sox. They were the Double-A affiliate. So you had to be George Scott, Joe Ford, the third baseman, Rico Petrocelli, the shortstop, and of course, Carl Yastrzemski. You had to turn around. We were right-handed hitters. You had to turn around and hit left-handed. But we imitated those two, and we had some great battles in the backyard. And then we got involved in the sports programs in town. Dalton was a big sports community. And played baseball, basketball, youth basketball, hockey. And, I don't know, sports was important in our family. You know, our dads, we followed the Red Sox, rooted for the Patriots. Although we got the Jets in football, we got the Giants football games because we were right on the borderline there. I think in New England, baseball mattered, and what the Red Sox were doing was important to people. And I think that's how I developed a love for sports was through the family. My grandmas, my grandfathers, my mom and my dad, they all thought it was important.
Interesting. Talk about unique. Then you go on to be the general manager of both of those clubs. So if dreams don't come true, I don't know what does. And I got to tell you this. Here, I'm a Chicago kid. I don't even remember how old I was. I taped the 75 World Series. Probably, to me, one of the greatest World Series, if not the best in my lifetime. And I memorized all the players. And I have it. I still have it on a cassette tape. And, here's a Chicago kid. For some reason, I was a Boston Red Sox fan that year. I don't even know why. But what talk about a World Series. And the other part, I want to ask you about this. In your childhood, you were a linebacker. And when you look at a career in professional baseball, it's no different than a career in corporate world in some ways. You're going to have up and down. You're going to have competition. You're going to have some cutthroat area things to happen. So in some ways, you have to be mentally tough. I got to believe your childhood, your football career had to help you deal with some adversities along the way.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good point, Pete, because, our coaches always said, it's not whether you get down, it's whether you get back up and get back in there and compete.
Yeah.
And when I went to Amherst College, I played for a football coach by the name of Jim Ostendorp. And Jim Ostendorp was close with Don Shula, George Young, some of the greats of the NFL. And he ran the program at Amherst, and Coach Ostendorp, I want to tell you this story because I think it's instructive. Coach Ostendorp ran the football program like he was a professor, and he was there to teach the students things that they could use, life lessons that they could use throughout their whole career. So I was the calling the signals for the defense my senior year. And I used to go to lunch with Jim, and we'd go over the down and the distance and figure out what defense to call in what situation. Now, at Amherst, the coaches weren't calling the defenses. The coaches were coaching the players. So, and the players on the field would make the decisions as to what defense to employ. And that wouldn't be going on today, right, with the coaches. That doesn't even go on in college baseball. The coaches call the pitches. Mm-hmm. The catchers and the pitches. But my first game, I came over to the sidelines and I said, I talked to Coach Ostendorp, called a timeout. And I said, Coach, what are we going to do here? He goes, that's not the question for me. He goes, Duke, the question is, what are you going to do here?
Wow.
And then he asked me a series of questions, and he said, what's the down in the distance? I said, it's third and eight. He goes, what is this team's tendency? What do they like to do on third and eight? I said, well, they like to run the sprint draw, or they like to run the rollout. He goes, that's right, Duke. He goes, do we have a defense that can stop both of those plays if we call it? I said, yeah. I said, we can fire the linebacker on the side. They like to do that. And if he's going to roll out, he'll get the quarterback. And if he's not going to roll out, he'll get the sprint draw. He goes, that's what we're going to do, Duke. And so that was a teaching moment, right? And he used the practice field, and he used the game situation. And so on Monday, I went to lunch with him, And we didn't practice every day at Amherst. We did mental drills on Monday. We went over the film, and then we practiced Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then we had grass drills on Friday. So I went to lunch with him on Monday, and he said, Duke, I was surprised when you came over to the sideline that you asked me what we were going to do. He goes, that's your responsibility. I said, yeah, coach, I really appreciate that. He goes, Duke, let me ask you a question. He goes, how many doctors do we have on the team? How many guys are studying to be doctors? I said, well, we got three on the defense, and there's two on the offense, and there's another guy that's going to be a dentist. He goes, okay, Duke, when those guys are surgeons and they're performing surgery on their patient and something goes awry, he goes, are they going to turn to the coach and ask them, coach, what are we going to do? I said, no, coach, they're not. But my point is he used it as an instructive event to teach me a way to make decisions and a way to make decisions under pressure, right? By asking the right questions and knowing where to go to get the right answers. And I just thought, you know, people ask me, what was your best class at Amherst? And I said, I got to tell you, the best professor I ever had was Jim Ossendorf. He was a football coach. He believed in me, and he taught me something. He taught me something.
Wow. You know what? I love it because, like you said, nowadays, even at the young levels, you know, everybody wants to control everything the young kids do. You know, they say, well, let them have fun at 11, 12 years old, and then they control everything they do. They can't run the bases on their own, the ball's in front of them. You know, they've got to call the pitches. I mean, everything's controllable. And I got to believe that, you know, that's got to change a little bit if the game's going to grow and we're going to get players that have better instincts. You know, look at Latin America. We get a lot of players from Latin America. Those kids play on their own all the time, Dan. And what happens? They got instincts. You watch them on MLB, man. They make decisions, right?
Yeah, they make decisions. They learn how to play. So, you know, you look at, I'm going to tell you two stories about that. You look at all the great middle infielders that come from the Dominican Republic, right? Mm-hmm. And you go down there and you look at them. Where are they playing baseball? They're playing baseball in the street. They're playing baseball on these fields that aren't particularly groomed. And how do you think they develop good hands? Okay, by having good fundamentals and by being alert to catch the bad hops off the bad fields. So, you know, I ran a sports academy for like 20 years, and we had good fields. But when the kids complained about the fields, I said, hey, wait a second. Those kids in Dominican, they're not learning on good fields, okay? And they'll kick your butt on one-on-one. If you think you're going to compete at the highest level, you better learn how to. The field's the same for everybody, so you better learn how to. You better learn how to play on it.
And that, you know, now you're looking at. I mean, it's a global game, so you know, even you know, we tell our kids in the U.S., you know, you got to work even harder. Because, you know, there's kids coming from all over the world that want the same jobs, whether it's in minor league ball, pro, you know, the big leagues. It's very competitive nowadays.
Right. It's very competitive. But, you know, you made a good point, Pete, about the specialization of sports and the specialization of baseball in particular. And, you know, for me, I think kids learn how to make a lot of their decisions if they go out on the playground. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they learn how to resolve their differences, right? Wait a second. You swung at that. You broke your swing. No, I didn't. Yeah, you did. Well, they learn how to have a dialogue, right? Yeah, and they learn how to resolve problems and move on to a solution. But if you're going to.
We made our own lineup.
Exactly. We made our own lineup, and then, you know, we would, you know, exchange the bat to figure out who batted first.
Yep.
One hand over the other. But my point is we went out and we learned how to play. We learned some other skills. We learned how to negotiate. We learned how to manage other players on our team. We learned a lot of these things just by playing ball. But if you're going to be with coaches that are going to micromanage you, you know, when are you going to learn to play ball? When are you going to learn to make decisions for yourself? When I was a farm director for the Expos, we would have the Winter Instructional League. We would bring our best prospects down to West Palm Beach, Florida. We'd bring our best coaches. Philippe Alou ran the program for us for a couple of years. Great, great manager. Went on to have a great career with the Expos. And Philippe Alou used to not have base coaches on the lines during the instructional league. And why did he do that? He said so they would watch the ball and learn how to make decisions for themselves on their trip around the bases. Okay. So, you know, Philippe Alou knew about it. He grew up in the Dominican, but he knew that his guys had to learn some things on their own so that they could make some decisions, because when he got into a tough situation, he was going to be dependent upon those guys as big league ball players to make those decisions.
Yeah.
So we taught him to do that in West Palm Beach, Florida in the fall.
And I love hearing that, because that happens, you know, at the younger levels. If you don't start them young, they're not going to be able to do it. It's harder to teach them later on, those instincts, if you don't get them young enough. You know, Dan, the other thing you mentioned, you know, we're talking about is you got a break in your career early on, you know, before you became a general manager, and your baseball coach helped you in some ways. I'd love for you to tell that story, because everybody needs a little assistance or a mentor to kind of help them. Maybe they saw something in you. Maybe the coach saw something in you, made an introduction. How did that go?
Yeah, well, I was the bad boy for the high school team when I was like 8 years old. And the coach for that high school team was a guy named Jimmy Rivers. And Jimmy Rivers would pick me up. We'd go to the games. And when it came time for me to go to college, Jimmy Rivers picked up the phone and he called Bill Thurston at Amherst. And he said, Bill, I got a guy for you that I think can do the work at Amherst, and he could do a good job for you in baseball. And you know, Bill gave me an opportunity. I went to Amherst, and it was Bill and Coach Austin Darp who called Harry Dalton to help me get my first job with the Brewers. I had played for Bill in baseball, and I played for Jim Austin Darp in football. And they both called to recommend me to Harry, because Harry had graduated Amherst in 1950, 30 years ahead of me. And they both recommended me to Harry, and Harry gave me a shot. And Harry was a terrific mentor. You can see his picture over my shoulder here. That's Harry inside the Green Monster at Fenway Park. And Harry hired me to go to work for the Brewers at Yankee Stadium, in the dugout at Yankee Stadium. And I went down there my senior year. At the end of the interview, I said, Harry, am I going to get the job? And he goes, Dan, you're from Western Mass. I'm from Western Mass. Harry was from Springfield. He goes, you went to Amherst College. I went to Amherst College. He goes, you grew up in a town that has my last name on it. You grew up in Dalton. He goes, if I didn't hire you, it'd be like turning my back on myself. He goes, of course you got the job. And then the next sentence out of his mouth was, now I'm not going to pay you very good,
right,
but I'm going to teach you a system of player evaluation and player development that you'll be able to use to make a living. So.
Yep. I think we've all heard that, right? You know, because you want the opportunity. And also, they say, well, I'm not going to pay you a lot. But on the flip side, wow, a guy like Dalton, right, you can't pay enough money for that education and what he taught you.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Harry had come up through the Oriole farm system, right? He joined the Orioles 1954, or the Orioles came to Baltimore. Harry joined them shortly thereafter. He was the farm director under Paul Richards. Mm. And Lee McPhail was the general manager. And then Harry worked his way up and he built those great Oriole teams. 1966 team, they had great pitching. They had Brooks Robinson. Of course, Harry's signature trade, his best trade of all time, was Frank Robinson, who he picked up that year, 1966. But they had, you know, Belanger, Davey Johnson, Andy Etchebarren, Paul Blair, Boog Powell, the great Powell. And then, of course, Harry had great pitching. You know, Harry knew you had to have a lot of good pitchers to win. And they brought up Jim Palmer, of course, Hall of Famer, through their system. But Harry taught me the same system that he used in Baltimore and Milwaukee. He had a lot of the same guys that he brought along with him from Baltimore to California to Milwaukee. They were called the Dalton Gang. And that was Harry's core group of people: Walter Yaus, free agent scout, Ray Poitevant, who was a director of scouting, player development, great international scout. Ray Scarborough, who was his pro scout, and then Walter Shannon, who had worked for Branch Rickey in St. Louis. He was his lieutenant. And that was the Dalton gang, and that's who I learned my baseball from. I learned it from Harry and his guys. And, you know, Harry, they've trained some pretty good ones. They trained Lou Gorman, who had a good career with him. They trained Joe McElvain, who had an excellent career with the Mets. And then, of course, they trained a couple of Hall of Famers, Pat Gillick, who was the pitcher in Harry's farm system. And then John Scherholz, of course, a great general manager with the Atlanta Braves. So I was very fortunate to have access to be working with Harry and his cabinet.
Dan, if you had to look at the general manager, when you were general managers now, I don't know if things have changed. I'm sure they have with technology and all that. But as far as the skills that are needed, that are important when you become a general manager, in case we have young people who are aspiring to something like that, what would you say the important skills that you have to have?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good question, Pete. It depends on what the job is. But my dad was an educator, so I took the approach of an educator. And when I put together my scouting staff and I put together the player development operation, I always looked at it from the perspective of a teacher, because in order to have a good organization, you got to be able to articulate the message for the organization, and everybody needs to understand what it is. And what will make it even amplify that message is if those people help you create the message throughout the organization, because they'll support it. So I think probably communication is one of the key skills for any top executive, that your communication is clear and effective. And then I think you have to have standards, and within your culture, you have to have standards that people understand. I mean, if you follow the New England Patriots, right? They have a particular way that they go about things, and everybody in the organization knows it. They've been very successful doing it. The Orioles for years, they talked about the Oriole way, right? Yeah. Which was really how to play, percentage baseball, how to play winning percentage baseball. And, that's what Harry taught us. But, I think a lot of it has to do with communication. And then when you're talking about leadership, what you do is a lot more important than what you say. People will follow what you do. So it's always helpful if what you say and tell people and what you do are aligned, and you have those things aligned with the goals of the organization, I think that's always a helpful thing to have a successful organization.
Now, I got to believe, obviously, it starts with ownership, goes all the way down. But as a general manager, you've got to hire a lot of different people. And is there one particular one that is critical to you as a GM? I know you got to have a great staff all the way down, the scouting system and coaches and development. But is there that one that is very important?
Yeah, great players. the more great players you have, Pete, the better GM you are, right? Absolutely. There's no substitute for talent.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to be a smart ass about it, but it's really about getting the best talent in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, and assembling them in an environment where they can work together to help you accomplish the goals. And there is absolutely no substitute for talent. Okay, you got to get the best and the most competent players that you can get, and Harry always encouraged aggressive scouting, right? Aggressive scouting will help you build a winning ball club. So that was a mantra that always was expressed to our scouts, right? And don't be afraid to go anywhere to find a player. Don't, leverage your contacts. Having good players, having people that like to work to find the good players, having people that like to work together to help those players develop their skills. You know, those are all key ingredients when you're running a sports organization.
You know, when you said go anywhere scouting, the first person that came to mind was Bill Clark, who was all over the world.
Yeah.
His dream, and I want to mention a special shout out to Bill Clark because, you know, I've known him a long time. I'm sure you have too. And he, he said one day he had a couple of things he wanted to do. And one of them was to ride a camel in the streets of Timbuktu. and he did that, you know, and I was like, I didn't even know where Timbuktu was at the time. But, you know, the other part of all this is being, you know, you've got to hire a manager. That manager's got to control a lot in the game, obviously, the players, the culture and all that, you know, take your message and carry it out. Talk about how you do that, because that can't be that easy in making sure you've got the right person on the field.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Pete, because the manager is really the face of the organization. The manager will address the press before the game. Mm-hmm. The camera will be on him during key events during the game. He'll make decisions during the game with the pitching staff. And then after the game, the manager will be talking to the fans again, right? Communicating, you know, what happened in the game, what went good, what didn't go so well. So I think having the right manager to represent you in the community is a key. I've been fortunate to work with some really good managers that had great years and went on to be like manager of the year, Philippe Alou, Kevin Kennedy, Jimmy Williams, Buck Showalter, a lot of good ones over the years. And that, you know, if your team's going good, you know, they feel good about your manager. They feel good about your club. They feel good about coming out to the ballpark. Of course, they like to watch you on TV and follow you. So, you know, having a good manager that represents the values of the organization and expresses them day in and day out, that's key. And, that's a tough thing to do. Mm-hmm. Over the course of 162 games, but you know, there's been a couple of good ones. Your guy there in Chicago, Tony La Russa, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And he's a good example of a guy that's had a great career over the years, and he's been able to win at a lot of places.
Yeah.
And represent the team and have a championship team. So, I mean, he's a great example. I mean, he's an elite manager, Hall of Famer.
And what do you think the qualities of these managers that are that successful are? Very similar to being a general manager?
Well, they're all driven. They all love baseball. They all like to compete. They like to win every day. They like to work hard. You know, 162 games, that's a grind. That's a mental grind. Wow. It's a physical grind, particularly as you get a little bit older. It's tough. The physical demands of the travel are just absolutely gargantuan on a team and a staff. So you got to have a real strong drive, know how to handle people. You know, Tony has a real edge in his intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, he's extremely intelligent, and being able to communicate, you know, with the front office, with the players, you know, with the fans, with the media, you know, those are all important qualities for the manager.
You know, you could tell nowadays, talk about media friendly. It seems like managers nowadays have to be a lot better at it. I mean, in some of the old days, you could tell some guys lost their cool, you know, and they just let people have it. You don't see that as much nowadays.
No, but I think if the players know that the manager has a burning desire to win, I think that is communicated to the players. And they'll take on that same trait of the manager when your team goes out to compete. You know, I mean, there's other challenges now with all the social media that's out there. But everybody is watching. Everybody is watching everything that you do. So, you know, there's very tight standards because, you know, sports are the entertainment business, right? They're in the entertainment business. You know, people like to turn to sports to get away from the things in their life that are mundane or they don't really like so much. So, you know, they'd like to come to sports to celebrate a lot of the great things about competing, about having elite talent together, about being with their family and going out to games.
You know, you mentioned La Russa. I just want to bring him up real quick again, because I got a chance to work one of the World Baseball Classic for a week. And one of the things I noticed was his attention to detail was incredible. Very detail oriented, you know, being an attorney, obviously, I think that had some help there. The other part is he's not afraid. He wasn't afraid to make, like, just the other night, I'll give you an example. Yesterday, there's the man on second rule, right? And extra inning rule. And you get a runner on second base, but there's a special rule. If that runner happens to be the pitcher doesn't have to run. You can have the prior runner do that earlier. Tony didn't know that. Okay. He admitted in the press conference. I love that because you admit if you didn't know, you didn't know. Obviously his staff, I mean, he has a coaching staff. Somebody should have helped him that. I get all that. That's what I love about him. Those things that, you know, he's not afraid to admit when he makes a mistake. I've heard him say it several times. The other part of all this, and please add anything, even though I mentioned La Russa, add anything else you want. But the other part of it is the scouting. I didn't want to kind of brush over the scouts too much because the scouts are the foundation, it sounds like, of the sport. I mean, if you don't have good scouting, it's really tough. And remember when Moneyball occurred, the industry kind of took a turn a little bit and released some scouts. And now that it's kind of coming back. Talk about how important the scouts are, because I get the part about the statistics, but in some ways you got to have both, don't you?
Yeah, I think the area scout is in many cases overlooked by the team, and the value proposition of what they bring to the organization. And I'll give you a good example. We had a left-handed pitcher with the Orioles yesterday, John Means, that threw a no-hitter against Seattle. Okay, and John Means was an 11th round pick from a draft when we were there, and we had a couple of scouts that were on, but we had one scout, Danny Haas, that really liked John Means because he had a good delivery. He was physically reliable. He was dependable, and he had the makings of three pitches. Now John Means toiled in the minor leagues for like 5 years, including 2.5 years at Double A. And then when he got his break in the big leagues, he came up with a little bit better breaking ball. He always had good control. And then yesterday, he pitched the best game in about 50 years in the history of the Orioles. It was really a perfect game, but the catcher let the third strike get by. It was 27 up, 27 down. No walks, 12 strikeouts. Just an absolute masterpiece. But if we didn't have Danny Haas advocating for John Means and saying, you need to take this guy. And if we didn't have scouts that were recommending that he be promoted to the big leagues at the time that we did it, I mean, John was getting a little discouraged, but I put him in the big leagues in 2018 towards the end of the year because we needed some more pitching. And he found out what he had to do in the big leagues. But if we didn't have people advocating for him, the Orioles wouldn't have had him. And then we wouldn't have had him in the big leagues, you know. John was thinking about taking another career up after 5 years in the minors. But to his credit, he stuck to it. He made the right decision, right? He's one of the best pitchers in the league now. Yep. But, okay, we got him in the 11th round. That's the value of having good scouts. There's no way you're going to get a left-handed pitcher who's going to go on and become one of the top pitchers in the league unless you have good scouts. So, I think the value part of the equation for major league teams, I think a lot of these major league teams are missing it. They think that they can get all the answers with the technology. And there's no question that the technology gives you more data markers to make your decision, but there's also there's a human aspect to this, right? Harry was fond of always saying, "Hey, we're not in the banking business. This is a people business, right? And it's human resources, right? And if you have good people and they're passionate about it and they can do their job good, like Danny Haas did in recommending John Means, you know, that's how you can build an organization.
What's the toughest thing in being a general manager? What was your toughest thing you had to deal with?
I would say that one of the toughest parts for any major league team or a major league general manager is when a veteran player who's been very successful in an organization can't compete at the highest level anymore. I think that's a very tough call for the general manager. And I think that's a big challenge. And then the other big challenge, I think, is that there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, okay, around these major league teams. There's an awful lot of cooks in the kitchen, and some of them ought to be busboys, okay? Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be in the kitchen trying to cook when they haven't been to chef school. And there's a lot of people in baseball, and they're all over the place. That think because they've taken a look at the numbers, and they've used the technology that they can go out and put together a winning team. But you know, it's not that easy. Baseball is a really tough game. I mean, all the sports are tough.
Sure.
And you know, you have to give, you know. Okay, so I mean, the scouts are a very important part in the value chain, but also in starting and building a championship club, right? Because if you got good talent pickers, you know, it's kind of like stock pickers, right? You can't have a good portfolio unless you have a bunch of good companies in your portfolio, and it's the same way when you're trying to build a team. You know, if you don't have the right people helping you pick the most talented players to put on your team and the most talented managers and the most talented executives, it's hard to have the top team, right? Because I mean, this is pro sports, right? You're at the top of the triangle where people with elite skills are rewarded, by showing their skills to everyone else.
Yeah. And this has been great. One last thing real quick, and then we'll close it off. And that is, you know, with, as the season goes on, you're always trying to make your team better, right? So it sounds like general managers really don't sleep because you're always trying to figure out, how do I get better? I got to get ready possibly for the playoffs. All right, Dan Duquette, fantastic show. And folks, we apologize for the slight audio issues that we had, but that was a great, great interview. We are closing it off. We want to thank Dan Duquette, former general manager with Major League Baseball, a fantastic show. I want to thank Brian Kroc, our producer with the Lineup Media Group. And of course, special thanks to everybody in the US and around the world for listening to the show and spreading the show to coaches, players, and parents all over the world. We really appreciate it. Continue to do so. And we will continue to bring you some great shows. We love bringing shows that help educate coaches, players, and parents at all levels of the sport of baseball. So folks, again, thanks everybody. Go to baseballoutsidethebox.com for the audio. Go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo, for the video. Subscribe to both. Get free updates on shows as soon as they are up. You won't miss any. And finally, thank you to all our listeners. Stay healthy. Be safe. God bless you. And we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.